Filmmakers Mark Moscato and David Graycon are on the road presenting Tough Stuff from the Buff, a collection of underground and defiantly independent videos about their hometown of Buffalo, New York. They're here in the CHLY studio. I previewed that DVD, Tough Stuff from the Buff, earlier today and enjoyed it very much.
Thank you.
For our listeners' information, the Tough Stuff from the Buff DVD is a limited edition. It's for sale. The package includes a DVD with the entire program of films. It runs about 70 minutes. There's a curator's essay, program notes, and handmade packaging that it comes in. The DVD I opened was numbered 92 out of 100. A few of the films became fast favorites, and I've kind of just got a few that I'd like to share about here. Esther Johnson's film, Hotel Lenox. I was thinking ghosts before the word ghosts was ever mentioned in the stories and the images, and I was thinking the ghosts and the stories.
Yep.
The blend of stories and images were captivating. Meg Knoll's film, Walk, 2006, a blend of Super 8 millimeter and video, and described in the DVD notes as a documentation of personal change and reflection on attentiveness in a difficult relationship. These are among the films that I particularly enjoyed, but I think that today, I'll likely change my mind tomorrow. Paris Henderson's film Main Attraction, a documentary about graffiti art, seemed to impress me the most strongly. I've got a clip from that film I'd like to share.
It's the most infamous element of the hip-hop culture, but they don't understand the content of the element. They just notice when an artist uses a building as his poster. His intent is not to vandalize. He just wants his penmanship to be recognized. And he realized, they say, his work caused the city to look a mess. He gets upset and try and demand the same respect as an architect that carries his blueprints by his side. But a graffiti artist carries his blueprints in his mind, which he uses as a pastime or self-expression. Authorities tried to give him time just to teach him a lesson, which is fine. Because you can lock up a graffiti artist, but you can't lock up his mind. Don't be surprised if it's a student on a college campus that uses Main Street as his campus. You'll never know, even if you ask him. So when you're walking down Main Street admiring the buildings, and as you pass them, you'll realize that graffiti is the real main attraction.
Mark Moscato, the film. Your thoughts or anything you want to add on that film?
I think this piece was also a part of the Portraits of Main Street program of Squeaky Wheel, and Paris was a high school student when he made that, and has now starting, I guess, a clothing line, and very active in the arts community in Buffalo. So I think that's fantastic that, you know, that this program is offered for teenagers, and then, you know, you never know what kind of effect that's going to have, and where, you know, someone's going to end up, you know, or, you know, how that's going to affect their life. So anyways, you know, working on I've worked on the east side of Buffalo, and Main Street is kind of a dividing line between east and west sides. And unfortunately, Buffalo is still a very racially segregated city. And we thought it was important to include voices from marginalized communities in Buffalo. So, I guess there's been a crackdown on graffiti artists in Buffalo, and the kids who, you know, Paris is friends with, were trying to create art, basically. And, the city, was enforcing these kind of laws and focusing on, you know, while there's all these other problems happening in Buffalo, you know, crime and, you know, joblessness and all these, you know, pollution, and, you know, the list goes on, the city is focusing a lot of its efforts on, you know, targeting graffiti artists, which, you know, if people are tagging at someone's house or something like that, that's, you know, kind of disrespectful. But if someone's just, you know, on a side of an abandoned building or something, which there are many in Buffalo, and Buffalo is probably actually a perfect place for public art, like graffiti and public art projects, that maybe shouldn't necessarily be dissuaded.
David Graycon, here's an audio clip from your film, The Twelfth Man, documenting some fan culture.
Well, I guess
guess you have to support whatever they're going to do.
I wouldn't be happy.
Go anywhere they want. Anywhere they go, you got to go. You're a real fan.
Go for the moon?
Yeah.
It'd be devastating.
All right, Charlie, thank you.
And there'd be nothing to do. What would we do there in the wintertime?
I think it would devastate the area.
Yeah.
Look at all the small businesses that are related to this. Parking. The little guys selling hot dogs and hats and whatever.
They're all going to go away.
What are those people going to do? Move around? They're going to go somewhere else? Erie County loses all the money,
Charlie.
I think not only the economic impact of it, I think the bills make people feel better when the bills win.
Is it good?
People feel better. Yeah,
not only that, I think New York should put more money into this because this is the only team in New York. The Jets, the Giants, they all play in New Jersey. This is the only New York team left. So I think they should put more money into this and help keep the Bills here.
Buffalo Bills will not move.
We were here, but
this is our 20th year as season ticket holders.
Lit up the Jets.
And we hope to be here for another 20 years doing the same thing.
It was a masterpiece.
And we love the Bills.
It was a
and hopefully in another 2-3 years as our offensive line gets better, we will be back in the Super Bowl. And there's nothing more I can say about it, but I love coming here for the last 20 years. Thank you.
Well, I hope it never happens. I really don't. I don't see it. If they do it, I questioned some friends of mine. They asked the same question. And they said, well, if the Bills move, we have to get a life. That's all they can say.
Trust me. Bills better not leave town.
Oh, come on. They can kill Buffalo if he moved out of town. Why would they want to move? They got all these 80,000 people all the time. Why would they want to move? They want to go to Toronto. Toronto ain't nothing. Go to Buffalo. That's where the heart of the country is, right there, baby. Buffalo. Right there. I'm talking about it. You know what I'm saying?
I neglected to mention at the start of that, David, that one of the questions that was posed in that film was, you know, what would happen if the Buffalo Bills left Buffalo?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's vital to have a screening of this sort about Buffalo, to have something about the Buffalo Bills. It's absolutely necessary because, I mean, it's such a very pivotal part of the consciousness of Western New York. I mean, when that team's winning, I mean, you actually feel it in the city. During their Super Bowl run, you know, it was definitely, moments where you like feel genuine, like pride and like kind of companionship with your city. And when they lost, it was actually really quite tragic and sad. But the fans there are really dedicated. You know, they come out, you know, every week. You know, it's really cold. They sold out every game for this upcoming season. So for the Bills to leave Buffalo, I think would devastate many people. Because, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, it's a blue-collar town. There's people who are struggling to make a living. And something like the Bills, it's not just blue-collar people into the Bills. But I think there's something about that culture that's very deep-rooted. And not just the Bills, but the Buffalo Sabres as well. So there's this fear that if the Bills were to leave Buffalo, then it would be really, really devastated.
because it provides people with a sense of hope, you know, and to lose that, I think, would be a huge blow to the city. Mm-hmm. Whether or not we have to actually subsidize that with tax dollars money is a totally different question. Interestingly enough, you know, after David had made this piece, the Bills have started playing games in Toronto now. So
yeah. That's kind of controversial. You know, are the Bills going to eventually move to Toronto or something? Mm-hmm. But this was actually, it's kind of fun to have this video in the screening because it was actually the first video I ever made as I was an undergraduate at University of Buffalo, and I made that video, and we were kind of putting together the screening, and it had to be Buffalo. Like, my other works weren't necessarily Buffalo specific. So we thought, go back to revisit this one, and I actually re-edited it, did a re-edit of it. But it's very kind of crude, but I like the kind of sort of in your, I mean, it's like right down in with the people, you know, it's like handheld documentary, and it's like right with the people that I think is like really authentic. And I think like it's, you know, probably the only film in the screening that really addresses like that particular culture or that kind of culture, like more directly, I think. But yeah, it's fun to go back and revisit that, but I think, if they were to leave, you know, people say if the owners to die, like they might move the team or, you know, but I think people would be really, really hurt actually it would be devastating.
In the film Vacancy, Gabriella Citriniti asks, what is a main street supposed to be, and what does it mean to live on a main street that's vacant? This audio clip captures one of the themes from that film, and that theme is, that there is beauty in the city of Buffalo.
To see the true nature of our city, I think we need to look beyond Main Street and past the empty streets and the vacant buildings, because when we focus on that, we can only see our struggling economy and all of the negative things that go along with any decaying inner city. So I think we should look at the history of our city. We can see it in the mansions that line some of the oldest streets, the parks, the old factories, and the architecture. I think we should look at the presence of art in this city, the performance art and our theater district, the visual art and the music. And I think, most of all, we should look at the people in the city, the cultures and the communities, and the overall community. Those people who are working to promote positive things about the city, the business owners, the preservationists, and even the people that are happy to call Buffalo home.
You guys love Buffalo, New York, and she obviously does too. Mm-hmm. Tell us more about that, the experience of your connection with the city.
Sure. Well, neither of us actually live in Buffalo anymore, it's important to note.
I know. I've noted it here. Yeah. You know, you don't live there anymore. But are you still attached? You know?
Yeah, but I still visit. You know, I go back every Christmas, you know, either once or twice a year, but definitely I feel a connection to it. And, you know, I was going through a period in where I live right now, Eugene, where I was just like kind of like homesick. And I went home for somewhat recently, and I was just really like, wow, I really miss this place. But how to describe the atmosphere of it, it's really kind of complicated. I grew up in the suburbs, and you know, it's somewhat affluent suburbs, but then it's interesting when you drive from the suburbs, then you drive through like the old steel plant area, then into the city, there's like all these different strata of class that's like extremely palpable. And then to see all these empty factories, broken, you know, there's just like this whole, it's like a cemetery essentially of old grain elevators and factories. And to go through that, you know, it's, I often tell people who visit Buffalo, you know, this is kind of the future of capitalism. This is, I mean, this is what's bound to happen if it's going to carry on its like its trajectory that it's on. I mean, it's just the natural fate of it. Like, how can this, the rest of the country sustain what it's doing if everything's, you know, transnational? So in a sense, like, in that way, it's like a very political experience. But at the same time, there's something kind of like quirky about it. And there's something, you know, within all these empty and abandoned spaces, there's things happening that, you know, people are filling those spaces with something, and people are making do-it-yourself spaces. And, you know, there's very rich neighborhoods. I mean, me and Mark are always talking about how we miss the food in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. You know, great old places where you can get spaghetti, or old German bars, or like, they don't quite have that on the West Coast. So there's something like that we really love about that. And the different neighborhoods, like a Polish neighborhood, Puerto Rican, Italian. It's really, you know, an interesting mix of people. And then at the same time, you know, people persevering, living there in really harsh, cold winters. And, you know, there's not a lot of jobs there. But then at the same time, you know, there's a kind of charm about it. You know, there's, it's also, Buffalo's called the City of No Illusions. That's actually one of its sort of like nickname, or one of it, you know, even the newscasters say this, like, according to the City of No Illusions, you know, there's something beautiful about that, that, you know, people are kind of like real and down to earth, much more so than I would say like a place like New York City. You know, it seems like very different. Like, we have a different kind of identity than New York City. It's maybe more associated with like the Midwest than perhaps something more like New York City. But I think there's something really charming about it. And I don't know if that's like a good way to explain it, but maybe Mark can add some things to that.
Mark. Yeah, it was a great place to grow up. You know, I don't know. Lost my train of thought there. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of this program kind of highlights and documents that struggle, the struggles that David was talking about class and economics. And in fact, this, image on the poster and on the DVD, the thing, you know, our website and everything, is a kind of a rendition of the Central Train Terminal in Buffalo, which if you take the train now, it's like this little metal shack out in the suburbs, like Amtrak. It smells like a urinal mint. It's awful. But this was an amazing, like, huge structure, and it still sits there, and it's this vacant building now. It used to be all ivory on the inside, and now it's all the windows are busted. There's graffiti everywhere, and it's really kind of, you know, a very sad thing, but even at that, there's this incredible sense of hope about the place, and I think you find that in a lot of, I mean, I think actually vacant spaces in general kind of are a hopeful thing, because you can, you know, seeing that there's nothing there, you can kind of project your ideas of what possibility, basically, and by having, you know, an urban environment where everything is maybe filled in, you don't have those possibilities. Mm-hmm. I think it was a great place to grow up. I think that being involved in places like Squeaky Wheel and Hall Walls were very formative in my growing up, and has led me to, you know, what I would consider my career at 33 years of age. Being involved in a number of different, you know, I've worked for, you know, 6 or 7 different nonprofits now, and largely, you know, that my career trajectory of going into arts administration at the University of Oregon, getting my master's degree, was largely due to the fact that, you know, I was a volunteer at Squeaky Wheel for a number of years and started booking, you know, screenings there as a volunteer. And I was working at a local Fox affiliate at the time, and was not really enjoying my job there, and started to think, oh, this place, Squeaky Wheel, is amazing. And I started researching and seeing how many other places there are like Squeaky Wheel around the country, and found out there were, you know, so few of them. And I was interested in maybe starting something like that, a center for media empowerment or a center for just community dialogue in general. And, you know, that made me want to kind of start my own organization. And so it's definitely affected my life in a pretty profound way. And I wouldn't want to have it any other way.
Yeah, and I think just to add to that, Mark and I both sort of, we didn't actually know each other at this time, but we were both very highly influenced by the hardcore music scene of the early 90s, mm-hmm. which was, both of us would go to these sort of concerts, and I don't think the music particularly struck either of us in a very profound way. But I mean, I kind of liked, it was a good way to kind of like work out your aggression at the time, but it wasn't so much about the music, it was the whole scene around it, in terms of like people were selling fanzines and there's this kind of interesting community going on around that. So I think both of us were really moved by that, yeah. at an early age. You know, people were having venues or shows and
without any money. I mean, it's you know, things happening in empty storefronts, yeah. or the back of somebody's, you know, there was a record space in North Tonawanda above, yeah. Record store, basically, yeah. in this kind of ramshackle attic space.
Right.
But, you know, it was kind of, you know, artists and activists kind of creating, you know, I think we can absolutely learn from these kinds of models in terms of, you know, we're in an economic recession. How do we make culture happen in hard times? How do we organize things and organize projects, minister projects without a lot of capital?
Right. Or that it's just not mass commodification and homogenized culture. You know, we need local culture, I think, to feel important. And I think it's interesting, like I've talked to a couple people in Nanaimo today who are saying, you know, there's this downtown Nanaimo, and then there's the strip mall section that's north of the city. And I mean, it's things like this that are making something real happen. You know, this is real culture happening. This is not Clear Channel. We actually have a DJ here talking to us. He's not just playing programmed music that's a computer. That kind of culture is alienating, ultimately. And I think there's something really deep rooted in this DIY ethic, I think, that Mark and I both really believe in, that's where things happen. It happens when people are doing it themselves, not as opposed to like corporations marketing things to us.
What's next for Tough Stuff in the Buff?
From the Buff, my friend.
From the Buff. That's right. We're not in Buffalo anymore.
Yeah, well, we're going on tour now. This is just our second show of 12, and we're going around. We're actually bicycling from here back to Eugene, Oregon, and doing a number of different shows at everything from a barn to a formal seated dinner and everything in between. So we're going to take it on the road. We're going to keep on keeping on, and we might, you know, there might be future screenings in the future, but... you'll have to check back to the website, which is, by the way, yes. TUFFSTUFF buff.wordpress.com.
Is it true, Mark, that you're going to be riding your bike in the buff tomorrow on the way to Victoria?
Sorry about that. I thought it's tough stuff from the buff.
Yeah. But no, are you going to ride? Are you going to ride your bike in the buff tomorrow?
Well, you might have to come down to the question and answer that's going to happen right outside. Find out.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, guys, for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you.
Thanks. It was a pleasure. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Keep tough.
All right. And good luck in the rest of your tour. And I know that there's an audience waiting outside. They'll have some questions for you. You'll be talking about all of this again out there.
Thank you.
Thanks again. David Graycon is a doctoral student in the Communication and Society program at the University of Oregon. He is working on a written and video dissertation about independent record store culture. Mark Moscato is an artist, curator, and activist living in Portland, Oregon, where he directs the creative cultural center, the Dill Pickle Club. His short films and videos have screened at film festivals, theaters, and non-traditional spaces across the U.S. And the third curator of Tough Stuff from the Buff, who wasn't with us today, Julie Perini, is a Portland-based media artist working in video, film, and performance. Her work has screened at alternative media spaces, galleries, and festivals. She currently teaches at Pacific Northwest College of Art.
People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society's CHLY 101.7 FM. CHLY.ca, community radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of these organizations.